This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Welcome to this workshop. I'm glad you're here. I think I'm glad I'm here. And if you let me refresh for you the little blurb I have in the workshop descriptions, okay? When we work with people, we face disappointment, reactions, failure, unhealthy dependence on us, and people weariness. In this workshop, we will talk about ways to move on when all we want is out. And you were supposed to come prepared to discuss ways that God has helped you stay engaged. Now, obviously, you're not all going to get a chance. But I do want to hear from you, and periodically throughout the workshop, I will be throwing questions at you. They are not rhetorical questions. I want responses. However, you're going to have to be prompt, because we don't have the time to deliberate and wait on each other. So, I welcome quick responses to my questions, even if you don't have it all put together. See, I have to talk for 40 minutes, so you can talk for that long, and it might not come out right, and it's okay. And I also invite your questions, if you have those as we go along. I want you to understand at the very beginning that when I talk about maintaining long-term vision in ministry, I am not saying that vision focus can't shift and change. There are times when God moves us in a slightly or majorly, at times, different direction as we navigate life. We have certainly found that to be true in our experience. But the point is that we stay engaged with people, caring about evangelism, and not only about bringing people into the kingdom, but holding up the hands of people who already are serving Jesus, but may be weak or discouraged. This is way too long. 2nd thing I want you to understand is, okay, I'm talking about maintaining long-term vision. Don't be deceived into thinking that once you got the vision, it's there. It'll always be there. It seriously won't always be there, and you've probably all found it that way. We need to understand that drifting from our original vision is a natural course. It will happen unless you are intentionally purposeful about keeping your vision. As you know, the second law of thermodynamics states that in the natural order of the universe, things degenerate rather than come together. For example, when you remove a pan from the stove, it begins to cool. Heat diffuses into the air, and it will return to room temperature unless you place it back on the burner. Drifting from your original vision is inevitable without focused attention to keep it renewed and alive. If you ignore the source of heat, capital letters, losing vision is only a matter of time. We need to understand drift. It is not a purposeful vision change. It is a quiet, gradual, slow, unintentional process. Think canoe. Unless you man an oar and purposefully engage in rowing, you drift. You may even have a paddle in your hand, but if you don't use it, you drift. You may have resources and people around you to help you stay focused in your vision, but unless you utilize those, you'll stray from your original purpose. Are you with me? You're in ministry. Do you agree or don't you? It's easy to lose sight. So, the first thing we're going to look at is what factors cause us. You know, when we can be so naive when we enter ministry and think, and just have so much energy and so much vision, and we think it's just always going to be this way, and it just isn't always that way. We lose our focus, we lose our perspective, our vision blurs. Sometimes we lose heart. What are the factors? What are the factors? What causes us to go there? Can you spin off a few quick answers before I give you my list? What tends to make you lose heart in ministry?
No
louder?
No results.
No visible results.
Difficult relationships.
Unbalanced lifestyle. What do you mean? Okay. Are you able to hear? Okay. What else?
My vision is my vision for God is God's vision for me.
I didn't catch that. When we think we have a vision, tell me if I'm saying this right.
Is it my vision for God or is it God's vision for me?
Wrong expectations? That doesn't happen. That's good. Let me give you my list. And these are some things that I thought about. Demanding people, okay? People who invade family times, personal space, even phone lines. People whose personal crises overrides my plans for the day. Demanding people. If you're in ministry, or because you are in ministry maybe, Satan will be in your face. He's your enemy, not people. He may influence people and cause you to feel that they're the problem, but he is the culprit. He is to be targeted, not people. Second thing I think can cause me to lose heart is demanding schedules. We feel trapped when schedules begin to dictate our lives. Especially for those of us who are married. For women. I think it can easily happen because it can feel many times that my schedule is not my own. I haven't planned this. Somebody else planned this for me. I have no say in it. I can't help it. There's nothing I can do about it. And we begin to feel that we have no voice. Somebody mentioned this, I think, personal expectations. People enter ministry with good motivations and good intentions, but with plenty of skewed ideas about the rewards, how people will perceive or appreciate them, skewed ideas about their personal energy, stamina, and limitations, and just we can be kind of naive about what ministry will call from us. And I think we can hold this unspoken belief that if I go into full-time ministry, God is going to protect me from failure, from overload, from burnout, from criticism. You are in ministry. Is that how you've experienced it? Something else I think that another on my list is failure. And that can either be personal failure, or honestly, what I think is worse is husband's failure. Just think about this scenario with me for a little bit. Let's say husband accepts a position of administrator. And husband is not an administrator. Husband doesn't do so well as administrator. Husband gets outside criticism. Husband gets my criticism. Husband is replaced. And the result is lots of confusion and plenty of shame. And needing to minister to others in the midst of our personal confusion and shame leaves us with many, many unanswered questions. The whys and the what ifs. Faces and names may come to your mind as we're talking. I well remember my personal journey with this. Another thing that can easily derail me in ministry is just the overriding interruptions, like wayward children, a special needs child, home church dysfunction or problems if you're on the field, deteriorating health, either in you or your spouse or your parents, and something even as simple as a growing family, okay? A young couple can go into ministry and suddenly it can feel like the children are coming faster than anticipated, and the wife's vision and focus hurriedly shifts because she can hardly keep up with being a mom, much less being in ministry. And then there's the mental fatigue and the discouragement and sometimes second guessing or calling. And as I started thinking about things, it felt like the list was daunting. How is there a way forward? So many things against us. Now, you're wondering what's on the other side of your paper, right? It's a little survey. You may do it right now. Don't spaz over getting the answer perfectly, okay? This is for your ponderings. And just quickly go through it and do it, and we will talk about it a little bit. So, would a few of you care to share the level of ministry you're doing right now? Could you sustain that the rest of your life? No. Oh dear. What else did you learn about this survey? Or with about yourself? Think about the last one. Three words to describe the person you want to be in ministry. If you think about those three words and three words that describe who you are right now in ministry, how far apart would they be? Or how close? Anybody want to say anything about the survey? I know it's kind of personal. Mm-hmm. Could you hear in the back? Interpersonal relational conflicts, obviously, can give you the feeling that you are not qualified to help other people. You can't manage your own affairs, am I saying it right? Your own relationships. What makes you think you can help other people? Okay. Anyone else? I know you're not a quiet bunch. I heard you before I got up here. You're not fooling anybody. Okay, so we've talked about all the things that can sidetrack us. Not all the things, but many things. Way too many things that can sidetrack us. How do we move forward? How do we maintain vision? What can I do to refuel and restore my energy when people or situations have robbed me of hope? What can be done with my cynicism when I have been hugely disappointed? Am I foolish to keep on believing that I can really make a difference in someone else's life and that God can still use me? Maybe I should just go back to laying blocks. That was spoken by my husband when the black hole threatened to swallow us up. I knew from the time that I consented to lead this workshop that I would have to tell a difficult story. I will mostly read it, probably so that I don't get sidetracked. And I'll purposely be brief, not only for the sake of time, but for the sake of confidentiality. But shortly before our move away from full-time counseling and into full-time teaching, there was a couple that John was regularly speaking with, trying to help the woman sort through a horrendous past, and seriously, it was awful, and trying to save their marriage. And unfortunately, the latter didn't work. But I'm ahead of my story. The woman found in John someone who would listen, someone who cared about pain, and someone who had time. And even though her husband was active and present in the counseling, she developed an unhealthy attachment to John. That converted into, as I remember, almost daily email contact with him, and inappropriate terms when she addressed him. John kept me informed along the way, but eventually he knew that he had to confront her. And he did, and she confessed and repented. That is leaving so much emotion out of the story, okay? And because I have to leave you with so many gaps, you may not really get the gravity of it and why it became such a huge deal to me. The truth is, while John maintained his integrity, there was a woman who, unintentionally or not, was invading my sacred space. And with time, I knew that I hated her. You don't need to tell me that that was a wrong response. And I'm quite aware that I was not the hero in that story, nor was I a model to pattern after. I'm not proud of the story, but I'm trying to be honest while trying to make a point. There simply will be times when we just want out. There doesn't seem to be a path forward except out. Times when we feel trapped, times when we feel out of control, and times when we don't know where to turn. Now, I do want to say something here and clarify. My hatred was wrong, okay? John has assured me that that there is a place for proper jealousy when we're talking about preserving marital relationships. And it is certainly right to protect that relationship and guard it well. And you may not agree with me, but I think there's even space for feeling anger. But hatred was not a way to move forward. Hatred was not redemptive. I felt personally that this woman had ruined her privilege of ongoing counseling with John and should seek help elsewhere. That is not what happened. With secure boundaries in place, John continued, and I struggled with that a lot. Months after we had moved away from full-time counseling, and geographically as well, and had no contact with this couple, John wisely recognized that I was still seething in here. Okay, just so you know, you cannot just hate one person. You cannot pick and choose hatred and bitterness will shrivel you. You can't keep it contained in this pretty little package of just at a person. So he saw it, and he suggested that I write out what I was feeling and write out what I wished I could say to her. So I did that. It was not very pretty. And there in black and white, I could see it for all the its ugliness. It was helpful, and I think it was a process of sorting out the appropriate feelings and the inappropriate reactions. But that's what it took. Seeing it in black and white just broke me. And I repented and felt tremendous release that I hadn't felt in a long time. Well, more months passed. And I became aware that this couple was going to be attending a function where we were going to be also attending, and I would be meeting her for the very first time. Now, you may be thinking, how can you hate somebody that you've never seen? You don't know, you've never talked to her. Well, and I'd be meeting her for the first time. And I was scared silly. I knew I had forgiven her, but I didn't know what would start to churn when I actually looked into her face. This paragraph of the story is not needed to force my point, okay? But it is needed to magnify Jesus. He is incredibly generous and kind. As the two of us faced each other for the first time, our eyes began to ooze, and we actually shared a hug. And what I had anticipated as an uncomfortable, uncertain meeting actually turned out to be a huge and amazing aid in my healing. There's a lot of women here today. I don't know what different kinds of ministries are even represented in this room. But I'm pretty sure some of you are involved in soul care, helping others deal with pain. And you know without me telling you that even though you are a figure helping others deal with pain, you are not immune from pain yourself. And I can only hope that our personal stories of pain give us empathy and better hearing ears to listen to other people's stories of pain. Your story is going to be different than mine. You aren't all going to, you couldn't all stand up here and say the same kind of story, but you have just as potent stories as I do. And you, every one of you probably could stand up here and tell similar kinds of stories. Tell about times when you just wanted to run away. Forget that there ever was such a thing as a call. And maybe move to Alaska. So what have you found helpful in staying engaged? Because of time, I'm going to keep going, okay? I have only four things. That is not exhaustive by any means, but I'm going to throw four things at you that I think are vitally important. And number one is to nurture personal vitality. And I think somebody mentioned that. If you've been in ministry for any significant length of time, you know how it works. Ministry always packs more demands than what you can do. I think I have to say that again. Ministry will always pack more demands than what you can do. People want more than you can give. projects, meetings, schedules, travel, money, put in there, whatever fits your situation, it'll take more than you have. And the subtle push is to give to the urgent at the neglect of the immediate. In other words, your children need feeding, or they need that planned trip to the zoo, and a phone call comes and says, I'm suicidal. It happens. This is not just a, it happens. And typically, whoever's voice is the loudest is the voice that gets the attention. And sometimes that's necessary, okay? I'll recognize that. That sometimes is necessary. Other times it takes a lot of wisdom from God to know. I found that it usually wasn't our children who hollered the loudest. But pay attention to me here. Too many times of pushing off your children's expectations and disappointing them will communicate that something or someone else is more important than they are. And you know that's not true, and you know that is not what we want to communicate to our kids. We know that. Girls, your first calling is to nurture your families, not heal the world. But to stay alive in a busy schedule is not just family times are important. They ought to be at the top of the list. But please don't tell me that family trips and family vacations are a waste of God's good money that could be put into ministry. Don't. I could preach a whole sermon on that. Okay, don't. If you and your husband are in full-time ministry, your children need away times. You need away times. But even family times are not enough. When we lived in Plain City and were part of Deeper Life Ministries, we knew we needed to keep my involvement in counseling to a minimum because I was already a busy mom of seven. I was homeschooling full-time and doing some public speaking as well as taking those phone calls, you know, that are... suddenly they're just there, okay? And after about 10 years of that, I began to feel a huge, huge deficit of some kind. And I didn't know what was wrong. I felt restless, dissatisfied, hungry for something, but I didn't know what. I didn't know what was wrong. I couldn't put my finger, I didn't know. Until we moved to Faith Builders and I started to give serious attention to their emphasis on solitude and personal retreat. And then I realized that what I was missing was time alone. We homeschooled. There was somebody around all the time. And don't misunderstand me. I think you understand. I love my family. It's not that I didn't love my family, but there was precious little quiet time to process life, process my own thought processes and struggles. And some of the afternoons, yes, I could slip away by myself and go buy groceries. I had to. But that was not restful because the time pressure was on. I had to get home and get dinner on the table for my children. And so that wasn't rejuvenating. All I'm saying is none of us will do well in the long run if we don't take care of ourselves and our personal growth and vitality. We need personal space as much as we might love people. We need times when we hold still long enough to be able to hear Him talking to us, to bask in His presence and to feel His love. And the emphasis here is long enough, okay? Half hour every morning is not going to do it. If you're always with people, you'll tire. If you're always home with preschoolers, you'll probably stagnate. If you happen to be serving in a different country or culture, you need times when you can get back with people women who talk your language. If you're behind a desk doing His bookkeeping, you are by yourself, but that won't be enough either. Okay, second point is, you need to revisit your mission statement. People who care enough about people to go into full-time ministry often have a life verse or a mission statement that is their guiding force. But time and busyness and demands easily help us forget. In ministry, all kinds of people can pull you in all kinds of directions and easily distract you from your primary reason for ministry. Even if you are with a ministry and they have a mission statement, which is good, they should, it will still not be quite the same as your personal one. So keep your own in front of you. Let me give you an example. We moved to Pennsylvania and got involved at Faith Builders in 2006. John's primary reason for moving was full-time teaching. And that's what he did at first. Well, with time, he served on a leadership team of 6 men who basically oversee the work of FB. He also consented to be a mentor. He began filling the role of campus pastor. He still does some counseling. Are these distractions to his original call? Not entirely. But he has had to say no to things that really don't fit it quite right. Remember, okay, say no even to good things, okay? Necessary things. But you need to keep your vision statement in front of you because you cannot do everything there is to do. Jesus at times needed, let me remind you of a few things that he said. I don't know if he needed to remind himself, but he needed to remind people around him. Many times what people wanted from him fit his purpose, and other times not so much. Do you remember him saying to the Canaanite woman whose daughter was possessed, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of Israel." But his compassion and her pursuit of him got his attention, and he did not ignore her. Another time, he said, "Who made me a judge and a ruler over you?" That's not what he was there for. If Jesus needed to be reminded, how much more do we? So, it's important that we nurture our personal vitality. It's important to revisit our mission statement. Third one I say is remember your original calling. Now, stay with me, okay? You might quickly go to, but that's kind of the same thing. It is kind of, but I think there's a difference. Let me give you another personal story. I'm sorry, but those are the ones that I know best. When we lived in Minnesota and John began to sense a strong inner urge to help struggling, hurting people. And that came out of circumstances that are too lengthy to chronicle here, but we tried to discern the Lord's will. We tried to listen to what he wanted to say, and eventually the fellowship we were at that time actually asked us to move to Ohio and start a counseling center. And I know that is a very short blurb to encapsulate all the fluctuating emotions and the lengthy process and the decisions and the 6-month-long goodbye to church and community. But anyway, sometime early on in that, when that decision was, and John felt the call, and we were pretty sure we'd be moving, I was struggling. My Abraham had received his call, but I was no Sarah. We'd be moving into a community where we knew almost no one. The churches that were options were all beachy, and while there's nothing wrong with being beachy, we weren't. The day school had an attendance of around 100 children, and our children were used to a small one of about 12 students. And I had always not wanted to raise my children in a largish Mennonite community, and it felt all wrong. And I actually questioned whether this was actually, where the timing was right, and whether God, this was really what he was asking of us. And so I remember going to God and talking to him about it and telling him that if this is really what we're supposed to do, could he please help me feel the confirmation as well as John? No arrows out there yet shooting me down. I don't know if that was right or not. Was I being presumptuous? Was God obligated to make John's call my call? Well, God isn't really obligated to us at any time, but he is good and he is loving. And it was approximately 1 week after that prayer that suddenly I realized, you know what? I'm not struggling with this anymore. I'm not feeling the reservations. I was able to get on board and we moved ahead with plans. Not that we wouldn't have otherwise, but to me it felt like such a confirmation of God caring about how I felt about a very significant decision in our life. And so one reason I think it's very important to revisit and think about your original call is because when things get tough, you have a place to go back and say, but I remember, I knew when he called. Fourth thing is to pay attention to relationships. And this might feel a little bit like the first one, but the other is more personal, spiritual vitality. And this has more to do with just your needs socially. And most of us don't do well when we feel alone. Whether we're people, persons, or not, we need other people. And no matter how busy we get in ministry, no matter how busy we are as mothers or teachers, I don't know what all you are, you must take time for relationships. And this isn't going to look the same for you as it does for me. How you keep up your personal friendships and relationships is going to be different than how I do. Help me out. Review with me without looking at your notes. The 4 points that we talked about are crucial in helping us to maintain good vision in ministry. What was number one? Yes, pay attention to personal growth and vitality. Number two. Yes, revisit. Revisit your mission statement. Keep it in front of you. Number three.
Remember your original call.
Yes. Think back about how God called you in the first place. And four. Pay attention to relationships. Good. Now, we have maybe a couple minutes or less. Do you have questions or ways to balance out what I've talked about?
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.